What's your favorite scary movie?
Welcome to 13 Degrees of Screams,
where we watch and dissect your favorite spooky movies.
I'm your host, Alex.
And Stephanie.
And this is a mostly horror podcast.
This week, we bring a mummy back from the dead in The Mummy.
So, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Mummy before we watched it for the podcast?
I actually have.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I do. It's fun. It's a fun time.
This is such a good adventure movie.
It's kind of like, when did National Treasure come out? It's National Treasure-esque.
Yes. National Treasure came out after this.
Okay.
But
it feels National Treasure-y.
Yeah. This is our friend Eddie's like favorite movie, which I'm fairly certain they're the one who suggested this movie.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Eddie. We were texting because I sent them a picture as I was watching. I'm like, guess what movie we're doing today? And then I was saying I really like The Mummy 1 and 2 and really like National Treasure. I feel like they're very similar, but they're just so much fun as an adventure movie.
Yes, exactly. I haven't seen the second one, and I only watched this one recently, like a year or two ago, honestly.
You've never seen the second one?
Yeah, no. But I had never seen it like a year or two ago, so I just watched the first one by myself.
Okay, I saw this when it came out, so I have such nostalgia for it. Like watching this as 7-year-old me, I'm like, yeah!
Of course you did.
What do you mean, of course I did?
Sometimes some parts are a little weird and scary that you would think maybe a child would be scared of.
No, me never.
I know.
No, we have this rated as a 2.
Well, yeah, I guess that's not too bad.
Yeah, I don't consider this a horror movie, really.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Just some of the attacks are a little scary. His face gets all weird and stuff.
He's the corpse.
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah, like when his mouth gets all stretchy.
And yeah, I think it's just presented in a not as scary way. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot. I like Brandon Fraser.
Yes, he's cute.
He's great. Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Don't you? I thought that was a consensus.
Well, have you seen him in George of the Jungle?
Yes. He's also cute there, if I recall. It's been a while.
A little bit. Also, what's her name? Rachel Weisz. I like her a lot, too.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I recognize her from anything else.
Lovely Bones. She was the mom in Lovely Bones.
Really? Oh, okay.
Oh.
This might be a hot take. I also kind of find the guy that plays the mummy attractive.
No.
Not the corpse.
I could see it.
But
I mean,
the guy.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Why would that be a hot take?
Like, I didn't know if that was a consensus or not. Oh, like, a normal thing.
Yeah, he's kind
of. Yeah, he's a
well-to-do.
Well-to-do. Yeah, for sure. For a mummy, very well-to-do.
Well, once he's all, like, human again.
Yeah, yeah. No, he looks a little fun, and he calls her a princess and stuff. I'm kind of into that.
You're like, all right, you know what? Honestly, I'm going to go with him. That's fine.
Brendan Fraser wants to make her work, so, like, go be a princess. Like,
honestly, it's kind of like win-win. Like, whoever ends up winning the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like
it's there's no
it
downside.
Doesn't really suck, nah.
That's Stephanie. Just like, well, I'm not gonna try too hard because it really just doesn't matter in the end.
Isn't it really just fair if I just let it play out as it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. What happened will happen.
Right. Let the pieces fall where they may.
All right, you ready to hear some movie background?
Yeah.
The Mummy is a 1999 American action-adventure film created by writer and director Stephen Sommers, serving as a modern retelling of the 1932 film of the same name. The story revolves around the daring exploits of adventurer Rick O'Connell, who embarks on a journey to Hamunaptra, the city of the dead, accompanied by a librarian and her older brother. Their fateful discovery of Imhotep, a cursed high priest with supernatural abilities, sets off a chain of events. Filming for the movie started in Morocco and the United Kingdom, with the production team enduring harsh conditions such as dehydration, sandstorms, and encounters with snakes while shooting in the Sahara Desert.
Damn.
Yeah, that sucks.
Trying?
Yeah. I've been like, I don't want to work on this film no more. Or pay me millions. One of the two.
Yeah, that's probably one of the reasons why I haven't moved south yet in my life, because Snakes and bugs, snakes and bugs. They bigger, they more intense there. So that's not for me.
I'm cool with snakes. I actually really like snakes. Some of the bugs, though.
I mean, snakes I don't really mind as long as they're not going to choke me or bite me. So.
Well, they only really do that if they're threatened. So.
Yeah. But I've held a python before.
Oh, have you?
When I was a child. Is like that a really big one? Situation. Yeah.
Yeah, I did that at a camping thing once, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're so cute.
I think they are cute. Mine was like yellow and white, and yeah, this town was like,
hello, I'm a usual
snake. I'm smealing.
I'm not a bad guy.
And like seven kids held them all together. So.
Wow!
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah.
The visual effects, including the creation of the mummy, were brought to life through the seamless integration of live-action footage and computer-generated imagery by Industrial Light and Magic. The film's evocative orchestral score was composed by Jerry Goldsmith.
Huh?
Upon its theatrical release on May 7th in 1999, The Mummy achieved considerable commercial success, amassing over $416.4 million worldwide, despite receiving mixed critical reviews. The film's success led to the creation of two direct sequels, The Mummy Returns, which I also really like, and The Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Emperor in 2008, which I haven't seen,
mm-hmm.
as well as spinoffs like the animated series and a prequel, The Scorpion King, in 2002, which sparked its own sequels.
I feel like I've seen The Scorpion King for some reason.
With The Rock? Yeah.
It feels like something my dad would have watched and I would have been like not interested.
Yeah, The Scorpion King is in the second one. And I'm sure you've seen like memes or something of what he looks like in that movie. The CGI is so terrible.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I'll show you. It's so bad.
Okay.
It was like, what, 2001? So it was, you know, like in the first Harry Potter, like some of the people look so bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was like that, but like front and center.
Yeah.
It's so.
We're going to make it the whole thing.
Yeah. Why'd you do that? I would have been like, never mind.
Yeah. This obviously wasn't a good idea, so we just won't do it.
Yeah, although the design is cool because it's The Rock, so from waist up, but the bottom part, like mermaid, but a scorpion and giant.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds sad.
That sounds sad.
Like disappointing and sad.
That's fair. Notably, the role of Rick O'Connell was initially offered to high-profile actors, including Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, and Ben Affleck, although various circumstances and scheduling issues prevented their involvement in the project. But I'm glad that they didn't get it because Brendan Fraser is the best for that role.
Yeah.
I
mean, he is the perfect, like, adventurer type, especially. I couldn't picture another person playing.
No. He's great.
Yeah.
On Rotten Tomatoes, The Mummy has a 61% with a critical consensus stating, it's difficult to make a persuasive argument for The Mummy as any kind of meaningful cinematic achievement, but it's undeniably fun to watch. That sounds so harsh.
Yeah.
But I'm like, girl, it's fine.
But ultimately, like, you have a good time. Yeah. Like, okay, you could be a little nicer.
No, like, it's not going to be, like, groundbreaking or anything, but it's a good time.
Who's expecting that?
Right. It's The Mummy.
I need to go and educate myself. I'll go watch The Mummy.
The Mummy. Yeah, no.
Dim, dim, dim. Okay. Would you like to hear about the plot?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I am going to need help pronouncing some of these things.
Okay, I don't know if I got you, but I'll try my best.
We're going to work through it together.
Team, go team.
Mm-hmm. In Thebes, Egypt, 1290 BC, High Priest Imhotep is caught having an affair with
Aksunamun,
the mistress and future bride of Pharaoh Seti I. The couple kills the pharaoh upon discovering their relationship, and while Imhotep flees,
Just call her Anki.
Aksunamun kills herself, believing she can be resurrected. Imhotep and his priests steal her corpse and bring it to Hamunaptra, the city of the dead. The resurrection ritual is stopped by the pharaoh's bodyguards, the Magi. Imhotep's priests are mummified alive, while Imhotep himself has his tongue cut out, then is cursed and buried alive with flesh-eating scarabs at the feet of the statue of the god Anubis. The Magi are then sworn to prevent Imhotep's return.
That's all bad. It's all bad.
Yes.
No good.
It is. It didn't start out strong for him, nah.
No, not at all.
In 1926 AD in Cairo, Evelyn, a clumsy librarian and aspiring Egyptologist working for a museum curator, Dr. Terence Bay, meets up with her brother, Jonathan Carnahan, because he's found an intricate box and map that led to Hamunaptra.
I didn't realize this took place in the 20s.
Yeah.
And then it made sense after.
Right, how they're dressed and everything.
Because I hadn't seen this in a long, long time. And I never, like, I was like, this is modern day. This is the 90s.
For sure.
No, not quite.
Yeah, no, not really. But, yeah. Jonathan reveals he actually stole the box from an American adventurer, Rick O'Connell, who discovered the city while in the French Foreign Legion 3 years earlier. Evelyn and Jonathan find Rick in a local prison and make a deal with him to lead them to the city, bribing prison warden Gad Hassan to free him with 25% of whatever they find there, and ending up allowing him to join the group.
Yay. What a like, ragtag.
Right, of people that don't really want to be here.
The only person who wants to be there is Evelyn and Jonathan.
Right.
Right? That's right. About it.
Pretty much. Rick guides Evelyn and the others to the city, encountering a band of American treasure hunters led by Rick's cowardly acquaintance,
Benny
Gabber.
Benny.
So last time they saw him, he kind of like just deserted them. He just ran off into the desert. So
yeah.
Dude, so yeah, definitely cowardly.
This guy sucks.
He does.
He's so shitty. And again, like I said, I hadn't seen this in forever. And as soon as I saw his face, I'm like, that fucker.
Right.
I was like,
ruining shit.
He deserves what he gets.
Mm-hmm. Despite being warned to leave by Ardeth Bay, leader of the Magi, the two expeditions continue their excavation. As Warden Hassan is looting artifacts, a flesh-eating scarab hatches from a decorative shell and burrows inside his body, killing him. Yeah, and you could just tell it kind of like just took a chunk out of his heart, and he was like, yep, I'm done. Done. And I'm like, fair. That would kill me too.
Honestly, if that happened to me and I saw it under my skin, I probably would just die of shock and horror and sadness.
I'd be like stabbing myself trying to get it out. And then, you know, that would probably be how I'd get me. Like, like the bug wouldn't kill me. It would just be me stabbing myself.
Oh, God. I hate those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real enemy of this movie. The mummy. Okay, fine. I can deal with it. The bugs. The mountain bugs.
He's going to make you a princess. It's the bugs. It's the bugs that are a problem.
Do you think he's going to make me a princess, Stephanie?
I think he would.
You think so?
I think.
Oh, my God.
I think he could.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I'm a princess. Be whatever you're going to be. You
okay.
Know?
Work.
Aspire.
I try my best.
Meanwhile, several diggers working with the Americans are killed by triggering a cloud of pressurized salt acid during the excavation. Don't look like a pleasant death.
Mm-mm.
Evelyn searches for the Book of Amun-Ra. Made of pure gold. Instead of finding it, she stumbles upon Imhotep's remains.
Oops.
The team of Americans, meanwhile, discover the Black Book of the Dead in a cursed chest accompanied by canopic jars carrying Aksunamun's preserved organs.
Mm-mm.
That night, Evelyn, of all people, takes the Book of the Dead and just reads it out loud. I'm like, girl, it's obvious. You shouldn't be reading from it if it was locked. It was a locked book.
She's a librarian, so I think...
She's like, reading is fun. And
reading's fundamental.
So she accidentally awakens, you know, the mummified Imhotep, who seems to briefly confuse Evelyn with Anaksunamun. The expeditions flee back to Cairo, and Imhotep follows them with the help of Benny, who has agreed to serve him. As a little coward bitch.
Asterisk as a little coward bitch.
Right.
Dude.
He regenerates his full strength in human form by killing the now cursed members of the American expedition and brings the 10 plagues back to Egypt. And Benny's just kind of like his chauffeur, like the great priest Imhotep thanks you for your eyes and your tongue, but he's going to need a little more to the one guy that's like really fucked up from the expedition.
Yeah.
And it just turns him into bones. Like,
yeah. Also, like, you could just take it from Benny.
Yeah. It's like, he's your servant. Like,
is that his job?
I feel like, yeah, it could be.
Just let
him. Then you could just bring him back and have him serve you as bones.
As bones?
As bones. Don't act like you don't have the power. He's making himself survive as bones.
As bones. Bring it back as bones. That's Stephanie's plan.
You know, if I got to be Imhotep's princess, I would have like so many revolutionary ideas for him. I'd be like, just bring him back as bones.
As bones. I have so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
Just bring him back. Okay. So, you know what? I don't want to know. Just bones. Oops, like all bones.
Just saying, like, he can use his magic to do this to Benny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make him work his bones.
He's going to work his bones, all right.
As bones, not his bones. Mm. I mean, I guess he could do both.
He was a real, you know, servant.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Evelyn learns that her boss, Terrence, is also working with the Magi. Rick, Evelyn, Jonathan, and Terrence meet Ardith at the museum, who hypothesizes that Imhotep wants to resurrect Anak-Su-Namun by sacrificing Evelyn. She believes that if the Book of the Dead brought Imhotep back to life, the Book of Amun-Ra can kill him again and deduce the book's whereabouts in Hamunaptra.
So there's two books?
Yep, it looks like it.
Neat.
I guess one was supposed to be buried at the foot of Anubis, but they lied about it on the map to confuse people, is what she was deducing.
The one's at the foot of Horus, correct?
And the yeah, the book that she needs is at Horus. The foot of Horus.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes.
Imhotep corners the group with an army of slaves. Evelyn agrees to accompany him if he spares the rest of the group. Although Imhotep does not honor his word, Rick and the others find their way to safety, with Terrence sacrificing himself to ensure their escape.
What a hoe. Like, he's like, yeah, sure, sure, sure. And then he's like, kill them all.
Right.
Excuse me, sir. You need to honor your word. If you want to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Right.
And that's not beating the best by turning your back on your word.
Exactly.
So, like, no.
Yeah.
Like, rude and disrespectful.
What kind of guy are you going to come back from the dead and not honor a gentleman's agreement like that?
Exactly. That's sure. What I'm saying. Wow.
Rick, Jonathan, and Ardith recruit Captain Winston Havelock, a member of the Royal Air Force with a death wish, to fly them back to Hamunaptra in pursuit of Imhotep.
Like, he legitimately wanted to die, right?
Yeah, he literally came into a bar and he was like, wish I died with those other people.
Oh, okay.
All right. And they're like, we'll take you up on it.
And he's like, tight.
We're going to make sure you die. Like,
okay.
However, Imhotep magically conjures a sandstorm, crashing their plane and killing Havelock. So it's like instantly like a self-fulfilling prophecy for him.
Yeah. In the sandstorm, you could like see the mummy's face. And I thought that was the coolest thing as a child.
Oh, yeah.
So cool.
It's so cool.
Isn't it so cool? You could see his face. He's like, roar. And his mouth opens in the sand.
And he's all stretchy.
He's all stretchy.
He's got those little stringies of flesh or whatever he's supposed to be.
I hated that sentence you just said out loud.
Sorry.
How could you do this to me?
Just the stringy.
Yeah.
Zach, do it again. Sorry. Just curious. Just
hurtful.
Just to study. No, sorry.
Just to study?
Just a study of what
my reaction?
Yeah, a little bit. Oh,
well, I just know I did not like it.
Okay, sorry.
But anyways, sand mummy, very cool.
Yes, for sure. Not the F word.
Yes, correct. Don't say that.
Rick, Jonathan, and Ardith locate the Book of Amun-Ra in Hamunaptra, while Imhotep prepares to sacrifice Evelyn, also bringing Aksunamun's mummified remains to life as part of the ritual. Rick manages to rescue her after a brutal fight with Imhotep's mummified priest and mummified soldiers. Aksunamun's mummy is also slain during the melee. Evelyn reads from the Book of Amun-Ra, making Imhotep mortal, and he's fatally wounded by Rick. Imhotep degenerates back into his mummified form and descends into the pool of souls, vowing revenge.
Not gonna lie, that looked really bad. When he fell into that water, the souls.
Right.
I'm like, ooh. CGI, not great.
Yeah.
On water.
Yeah, no. I was like, oh, he's just gonna take a bath now?
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's what's happening.
Meanwhile, Benny accidentally sets off a booby trap while looting the city of its riches and is killed by a swarm of flesh-eating scarabs as Hamunaptra collapses into the sand.
There's, like, literally a lever just, like, poking out of the wall.
Uh-huh.
And it was, like, a self-destruct secret.
Right.
The whole city just...
It's like, we're all done here. Just pack it in for the day.
Could you just imagine them building this place and they're like, here's the self-destruct just in case, like, in the main room.
Just if you wanted to, it's always here.
Yeah. It might as well have just been placed like a fire extinguisher, but just take out the entirety of the city.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Sounds right.
What are you doing?
Ardith bids Rick, Evelyn, and Jonathan goodbye, and the trio rides away on a pair of camels, not realizing it is laden with Benny's stolen treasure.
Woo! Fuck
so
you,
he's been
Benny!
Collecting stuff, and I think he had a camel ready to go with gold, but he went back in.
Yeah, he did, because he sucks. Yeah. And he died by a bunch of bugs.
That's too many bugs.
They were in that movie quite a bit.
For sure, yeah. They were really, like, the bad guy. It wasn't the mummy.
The mummy was, like, a ever-present threat, but the bugs were just everywhere.
For sure. Would you like to hear about mummification and mummy lore?
Yes.
Mummification, the ancient practice of preserving bodies, holds a significant place in human history and culture. Originating in ancient Egypt, mummification was a complex ritual aimed at preparing the deceased for the afterlife. Beyond its practical purpose of bodily preservation, mummification also gave rise to a rich tapestry of lore and mythology that continues to captivate imaginations to this day. Mummification in ancient Egypt dates back over 5,000 years and was intricately linked to religious beliefs surrounding the afterlife. The process was initially reserved for royalty and elite members of society, but later became more accessible to a broader range of individuals.
Don't say elite, just like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would have definitely been one of the first person to be mummified.
Right, in the sarcophagus and have all the fancy things where they give you the crackers and whatnot.
Crackers?
They give you like food and stuff because they think you're going to make a journey. That's what their belief is. Like you need items to journey into the afterlife with.
On snacks. Snacks! Have you ever seen that video of that little girl?
No.
She's like, snacks! She wants snacks so bad.
That's fair. That sounds like me. Over a millennia, the techniques and rituals associated with mummification evolved, influenced by religious, cultural, and technological advancements. Different periods in ancient Egyptian history saw variations in mummification practices, reflecting changes in religious beliefs and societal norms. In regards to preparation and evisceration, the mummification process began with the washing and purification of the body. Internal organs, except for the heart, were removed through a precise surgical procedure.
No. Mm-mm. You lost me.
Yeah. I think they keep the heart because don't they weigh it against a feather? Mm. That was the belief. If you believe in the god Anubis, I believe to get into the afterlife, they weigh your heart against a feather. And if your heart is heavier, you don't get to go on into the afterlife. You go somewhere else.
So everybody?
Yes. Just everybody that believes in Anubis.
Yeah. But like no one's heart is going to be lighter than a feather.
I'm assuming it works out for some people. Otherwise, there's no belief, really.
A heart? I don't think any feather's heavier than a heart.
I think it's more about symbolism than it is actually, like, the weight of it.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so it doesn't
like
actually...
if your heart is filled with sin, it's going to be heavy kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
there's no way in hell a feather was heavier than anyone's heart.
So the brain was extracted through the nostrils, while other organs were assessed through the incision in the left side of the body. The body was then packed with natron, a naturally occurring salt, to desiccate the tissues and prevent decomposition. Natron was applied both internally and externally, and the body was left to dry out over a period of several weeks.
I literally hate all of this.
Right?
I mean, it's interesting, but also, like, just thinking about that.
Having to do that,
it's so nasty.
It is. It's really getting to know a corpse, too, to keep it around for several weeks, but okay.
Also, and correct me or stop me if you talk about this, but you mentioned the left side of the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hieroglyphs, they show, like, the whole body and kind of, like... They show both
like
arms.
Like a profile kind of thing, but then both arms are like raised.
Yeah, they did that because I think it had to do with the afterlife. If they thought you didn't capture it on the image, they'd go into the afterlife or something with anything that wasn't showing on it.
Interesting. One stride, the body was meticulously wrapped in linen bandages with priests reciting prayers and spells during each layer of wrapping. Amulets and charms were placed among the bandages for protection and guidance in the afterlife. The wrapped mummy was adorned with decorative masks and burial shrouds, emphasizing the individual's identity and status. Finally, the mummy was placed in a tomb alongside grave goods and offerings for the afterlife. So yeah, like sometimes you could take like vehicles and stuff. That's what they said.
Vehicles?
I'm assuming like, you know, Egyptian time vehicles, probably like a chariot kind of thing.
Oh, so not a plane?
Yeah, I don't think they were getting their private jets in there. You know, nowadays, of course. Mummification was driven by ancient Egyptian belief in the afterlife, where the preserved body served as a vessel for the soul's journey. The preservation of the body was essential for ensuring the deceased's successful transition to the next life. Ritual played a crucial role in the mummification process, with priests conducting ceremonies and reciting spells to guide the deceased through the underworld and protect them from malevolent forces. Mummification reinforced the deceased individual's identity and status in society, with elaborate burial practices reflecting their importance in life and death. Perhaps the most famous aspect of mummy lore is the curse of the pharaohs, a myth suggesting with those who disturb ancient tombs will suffer misfortune or death. While largely debunked by modern scholars, the curse has persisted in popular culture and fueled fascination with mummies. In fictional depictions, mummies have been a popular subject in literature, film, and other media, often depicted as reanimated corpses seeking revenge or causing havoc. These fictional portrayals draw on the mystery and intrigue surrounding mummies, contributing to their enduring allure. Mummification stands as a testament to ingenuity, spirituality, and cultural richness of ancient civilizations, particularly ancient Egypt. Beyond its practical purposes of preserving bodies, mummification embodies a complex tapestry of religious beliefs, cultural practices, and enduring mythology that continues to captivate and intrigue people around the world. Through the exploration of mummification, we gain insight into the beliefs and practices of our ancestors while also uncovering timeless mysteries that continue to fascinate us today.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I do find Egyptian mythology very interesting.
Yeah.
I think, you know Percy Jackson?
Yes.
Well, there was a book series called The King Chronicles that was like the same idea, but Egyptian mythology.
Oh, okay.
And I almost find it more interesting than like Greek, which I feel like everyone knows about Greek mythology.
Right.
But I feel like the Egyptian mythology isn't as popular. Maybe,
yeah. Not as many people know about it. Have you ever watched the show American Gods?
Nope.
They do have like a little bit of like an Anubis portion that they refer to, where you see like Anubis, like the god collecting souls to measure with the heart and the feather and yeah. stuff like that.
Anubis is
sending them through different doors and yeah.
Also like the pyramids. Like
oh for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
This is so random. I was watching the newest season of Survivor. Last season of Survivor, 45.
Mm-hmm.
The one tribe was talking about how they all believe the aliens created
the pyramids.
Oh, you saw that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what?
I mean, maybe.
but still, can we just like give the people credit? Like,
No. Couldn't be.
No.
But it's so fascinating.
It is. It is strange. But I mean, in a cool way.
It's strange, but like in a good way. It's like
in a good way.
It's like neato.
Yeah. What I don't understand is the difference between like cats and dogs. Like I understand that cats were like a big deal in uh-huh. Egypt. And even in the mummy movie too, like the mummy feared them yeah. because they guard the gates of hell or something like that.
I don't know.
But apparently dogs were seen as more servants, which kind of like Uno reverse in American society.
Yeah,
like cats are like just like, eh. But dogs are like, wow, I love dogs.
Yeah.
I believed in some cases, especially if you were like a high member of society, like royalty or something, if they took a liking to a particular servant or something like that, they would come mm-hmm. with them. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Talk about not wanting to be someone's favorite.
Yeah. Oh, also, I wish I come across these videos and facts, but there was like this one pharaoh or something whose hairdresser was buried with him and did like his makeup and stuff.
Yeah.
Was buried with him. I thought that was funny. I'm like, oh my God, just, yeah, do hair and be buried with the pharaoh. Like, how yeah. great.
Oh, I did find like a little snippet too about the heart and the feather.
Okay.
So just like the story on it, if the heart was found to be heavier than the feather, it was fed to Amut, the Ooh. Devourer, and the soul was cast into darkness. If the scales were balanced, the deceased had passed the test and was taken before Osiris, who welcomed them into the afterlife. Not Anubis, Osiris.
Okay. And it was just one single feather.
Uh-huh.
There's no way anyone passed that. There's just no way. Feathers are so light. They're like air.
So in the weighing of the heart, right, the heart of the deceased is weighed on the scale against the feather of the goddess Mat, or Maat, M-A-A-T, who personifies order, truth, and what is right.
Yeah, that's an impossible goal. I hope they mm-hmm. realize that. Mm-hmm. I hope they knew that they condemned all these people.
Huh. Strange. just making sure that that wasn't D&D, because sometimes, you know, you're looking up something and it comes into D&D and you're like, what? Oh, like, why do they have such detailed lore?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's D&D. Yeah. But no, that's all I got.
Very interesting.
Peace. I thought it was fun.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show and listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, giving us a 5-star rating is super helpful. And we will always appreciate that. And now you're actually able to comment on Spotify. So let us know what you like, what you dislike, and we'd love to read your comments.
Yeah, love to hear from you. And you could find us on social media using 13 Degrees of Screams.
This has been 13 Degrees of Screams, and we will see you next week.
Walk like an Egyptian.
I was about to say that. I'm like, yeah. Just da 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 da.
I don't know
nothing.
I don't know the words. I know the beat.
Fair.